My name, which is Ramona Lisa Ortiz Smith, and I use the pronouns she and ella. I happen to be zooming in from the Mojave Desert in Southern California in Joshua Tree, unceded Mojave land, unceded indigenous territory. And however, I'm a Berkeleyite. I'm one of the original Berkeleyites. I grew up in Berkeley from the time I was 6 months old till I was about 18. And then I moved away and moved back and raised my daughter there for a number of years. And my family was there for a while. I still have one relative there. Well, maybe I have a couple of relatives there now, but anyway, just wanted to say, yeah. So this evening, I am, and I see more things in the chat, so it's going to be a challenge for me to read the, we can lower it ourselves. Okay, good, 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 good. Okay, great. And actually, if you all need to tell me something and I haven't caught it in the chat, you might need to just unmute yourself and let me know what's happening because I get involved and I don't really look at it. It's just not my strength. So feel free to just say, "Hey, Ramona, blah blah blah." I'm glad that didn't happen in the meditation, but that might have been okay too. You know, I kind of try to roll more casually. So yeah, I'm not going to say anything else about myself because I know James sent out a thing and you can connect to that, and I will also share my web page. It's not really a site. It's very low key, and I do my best to try to keep it up with things. It's kind of like when COVID hit, I had to have an electronic business card or an electronic presence. So, you know, doing that. Oh, somebody saw something. Yeah. Oh, where was that? See, find things out. So yes, I used to be a, I was a dancer in my youth. Put it like that. Somebody just put that in the chat. So at this time, I just want to let you know. I just said that I was down at Domodina, and I am actually here as a guest resident teacher. And I don't know if many of you know about the Domodina Meditation Center, Retreat Center, but it's a place where you can come and do self retreats. And there are also retreats here that are guided by teachers. And I'll be at a guest. I'll be a guest trainee or teaching assistant at Spirit Rock Meditation Center in June for the annual BIPOC retreat, Black, Indigenous, and People of Color retreat. And that's about all I have coming up in terms of things that I offer. I kind of well, you know, my I'm multitasking and trying to talk at the same, trying to talking and cut and paste into the chat. Okay, there's something. My offerings are pretty well, my, you know, as a sole proprietor, I call my sole proprietorship free spirit, and that's kind of what I do. I just kind of go where I'm invited to share if it works out for me to do so, as opposed to being connected to one particular organization. I do have relationships with certain organizations. And at this time, I would like to offer you an opportunity to support my livelihood as a Dharma teacher. So if you'd like to make a donation in support of that, I will put those options, how to do so in the chat as well. So again, multitasking. Thank you for your patience. All right. Yeah, this is I feel so fortunate that this is how what I do to sustain myself, to I share the Dhamma, and really the Dhamma sustains me, and I like to share the teachings hoping that or with the intention and the hope that something I say, something I share, something I repeat that's already been said lands with someone in a way that it can benefit your life, and you know that you find tools or things that are meaningful that can benefit your life. And when I have a chance to share the Dharma, it's also a way for me to deepen my practice and deepen and challenge my understandings of the teachings, which changes all the time. So, okay, putting my timer on again because this is when I really start to get excited. Usually I get excited, we'll see. So again, I wanted to talk about metta in difficult times. And we'll have time at the end for what I like to call questions and responses, like my mentor does, my mentor Daral Williams, because I may not have the answer, but questions and responses, discussion at the end for a little bit. So metta in difficult times, this is what was arising for me in my heart. When James was asking what I was going to share, I said, I'm not sure. I said, but metta in difficult times. It's a difficult time in the world right now. We can have difficult times in our lives, difficult times personally, professionally, politically, environmentally. I mean, just go on, say it all. But we know, with Buddhist philosophy, it tells us that we have the 10,000 sorrows and the 10,000 joys always together, And sometimes, I know for me anyway, it seems like the sorrows can seem to outweigh the joys. And I think that that is a time when I think about what can I do? What can I do, not just for myself, but for the world, for other people? And that's when the Dhamma comes to mind. That's when the practice of metta comes to mind, is to check into my own heart to see, first, am I okay? And what care does my heart need at this time in my life? And then can I, cultivate that and check into it, and then maybe show up in the world with a little more kindness as just a first step. Maybe not even doing anything, but just trying to be kind, to myself, let alone other beings. Sometimes, I'm not as kind to myself. So metta is one of the four Brahmaviharas, or four divine abodes, in the Buddhist philosophy. Metta is a Pali word, and it has been translated as loving kindness. And then the second one is karuna, translated as compassion, and mudita, translated as appreciative joy. And then the fourth Brahmavihara is upekkha, translated as equanimity or equipoise. So they all have an overlapping nature. And Gil Fronsdale illustrates this in a piece that he wrote called The Four Faces of Love, the Brahmaviharas. Gil says, the heart has four faces. Each sees the world in a different way and speaks with a different purpose. Yet, as each aspect belongs to the same heart, they are inseparable, like the four directions of a compass. And I will put this, he wrote a whole little thing, well, not little thing, he wrote a whole thing about it on a website. So I did want to share that with you to read later, but I don't want to forget to put it in the chat. Okay. And so I also see the four Brahmaviharas, or qualities of heart, as qualities that work together. I kind of know that if I'm working on metta, compassion can arise, or the lack of compassion, the lack of the sense of compassion can arise, and joy can arise, or to support me in like feeling some of the joy in the world. Or sometimes I realize there's a lack of joy in my life, and I'm going like this because I see I'm going metta's right here. And then underneath at the bottom is for me upekkha, which is supporting me and balancing me and keeping me in the middle, as the Buddha often says, with making sure that when I'm cultivating or offering or sharing love, that I'm doing it with wisdom and compassion, that there's a sense of balance so that I stay resourced as well. And this evening, I'm going to focus on metta. However, I do invite you to still consider Gil's statement about how they're inseparable and how they all work together. I see them as guides. You know, it was interesting to read Gil's statement about it being a compass, because I see the Brahma Viharas as guides, you know, and I just really see how they balance one another, whichever one I happen to be focusing on, but it can't really separate them. It really is like, if you think of a compass, you know, it's always pointing north, and maybe metta's north. We just get like, where is love, you know? And no matter where you go, you still have on the compass the other directions, east, west, and south. So what is metta? Again, it's commonly translated as loving kindness. Ruth King, in her book Mindful of Race, she says that metta is a genuine desire for all beings, without exception, to be safe from inner and outer harm, to be healthy and content, and to live with ease. So when I think of that, especially in difficult times, I'm like, wow, you know, it's a genuine desire, not fake. We can't make it happen. We can't force it. It's genuine. It's authentic. And for all beings without exception, this touches on the Metta Sutta, which I'll share with you later, the Buddha's words on loving kindness, because it's supposed to, metta is something that, you know, doesn't discriminate who gets it. Because even if in our mind we're saying, only this person gets it, or that person, I'm giving it to myself, it's a quality of heart that we cultivate that actually really does shine through, or can shine through. Just like I always tell myself, does metta really shine through? Does love and kindness really shine through? Unconditional love? And I tell myself, well, if my bad attitude, if my funky attitude shines through and impacts people, whether I want it to impact people or not, then love and kindness has to do it as well. And so it's without exception. Even if I don't want someone to have love, if I'm walking out in the world with a more kind, generous, and benevolent heart, maybe someone else will be impacted by it, and I won't even know it. You know, someone in the grocery store that maybe I just said, "Oh, thanks, thank you. I needed that double bag. Thank you. You know, thank you for thinking about the plastic bag. I forgot to store them so that the paper bag doesn't tear up out there, even though the plastic's bad for the environment." But just an example. Or there might be people that I really don't even know how I'm impacting them. Same if I walk out with a sour attitude. There might be somebody walking by that goes, "Ooh, what's wrong with her? Du-du-du-du-du." You know, and then I've impacted their day. So, without exception, even if we don't offer the metta directly to someone, it goes there, which goes back to how we were practicing in the meditation with offering it to location or specific beings without it getting personal. You know, because I know for me, sometimes getting up close and personal can make it harder, because the story and my views and perspectives and what happened gets in the way, and I get tight just like this. You know, so if I take a step back and put some space in between it and still just offer it by location, sometimes that's a little bit easier, a easier place for me to start. Because really, you know, all beings want to be safe and protected from the inner harm and outer harm, meaning maybe the voices and things that we say to ourselves, or the external harm that's out there in the world today. War, social injustice, oppression, all the isms, all the, you know, everything. There's so much out there, you know. And so metta is, I see I'm frowning up because I'm thinking of all the bad things, all the things. But metta, loving kindness and happiness and well-being, is a quality of heart that's already innately in all of us. All four of the Brahma Viharas are part of our human experience. So we're not going out to get anything. Even though, it's, you know, we might use the terms, we're cultivating it, it's more like, you know, it's already there. Maybe we're waking it up. Maybe we're touching into it. Maybe we're nurturing it. Maybe we're watering it. maybe we're, just bringing it back alive, nurturing it, strengthening it, and becoming familiar with it again, so that we can touch into it for ourselves and others. And when Ruth King talks about it being, you know, a genuine desire, I think about authenticity and as well as something genuine. It has to be, for me, when I practice, an authentic feeling. And I know sometimes I don't connect well with certain words, whether it's my experience, my language, with my conditioning. You know, when I first heard loving kindness, I was like, what? I don't walk around saying loving kindness. Now, after many years of practicing in the Dhamma, it's become more comfortable and familiar. And yet, sometimes I still need other words so that I can connect with my heart, with my well-being, with my understanding of metta, the energy there. So I want to share a few words with you, and I invite you to, explore words that work for you. And what I find is sometimes, you know, when I'm practicing with metta, even though I've searched these words, looked them up, trying to figure out what they feel like for me, or words that just resonate with me more, when I'm practicing and I want to get out of the intellectual realm and really get into the embodied feeling of loving kindness, I can go back to just saying metta, because I've already defined it for myself. And I don't need to be so specific, you know. So benevolence, kindness, kind-heartedness, big-heartedness, goodness, goodwill, benignity, well-meaning, well-being, happiness. Sometimes for me, happiness is kind of a stretch too. So contentment. Contentment is really where I tend to rest, especially in difficult times. Because sometimes it's can be challenging to say, may I be happy when things are difficult and I know other people are suffering or I'm suffering myself. And then there are other ways to understand or express metta, and I want to share a few other quotes from some other Dhamma teachers that I love, you know. In Larry Yang's book, Awakening Together, The Spiritual Practice of Inclusivity and Community, Larry says that loving kindness is the primal intrinsic energy of the heart that also shares the experience of the present moment with mindfulness. So for me, that one gets to primal intrinsic energy. That's deep for me. That's what I'm talking about, when you can't find a word, and talking about that these qualities are already innately in us. It's a primal intrinsic energy of the heart. It's already there. We've touched into it at some time or another. Sometimes it's helpful to remember something or a memory where we felt good or felt loved or felt kind, to get in touch with that primal energy. In her book, Mindful of Race, you know, quoting Ruth King again, Mindful of Race, Transforming Racism from the Inside Out, she says that metta, or loving kindness, is a genuine desire for all beings without exception, again, to be safe from inner and outer harm, to be healthy and content, and to live with ease. Just bringing that back in, you know. Genuine. And I've heard Aya Ananda Bodhi, one of the nuns at the, former Alokavihara Monastery. The monastery has closed, but Aya Ananda Bodhi and the nuns are still practicing. And that's where I started to understand metta, or all of the Brahma Viharas, as qualities of heart. But and thinking of it as cultivating. So I'm paraphrasing here, but Aya Ananda Bodhi supported me in reminding myself that metta is about cultivating an open heart towards happiness. right? It's not something that we might be able to just do magically, even when we're sitting in practice. We're inclining the heart, or we're cultivating an open heart towards happiness. So there's a, to me, it's like tending to a garden, you know. The seeds are there, the plants are there, it's been there, but we're cultivating, we're taking care of the soil, we're doing our part with watering and fertilizing, and we don't know what's going to grow, but we know we've put something in there. And then it depends on all these conditions of the sun, the wind, you know, everything. And that's like our lives. All the aspects of our life can impact what the outcome is. But if we cultivate an open heart towards happiness, you know, we can be active with more well-being in the world for ourselves and others. And metta is also, as we explore it in the meditation practice, it's a mindfulness meditation practice. It's also known as a concentration practice, you know? And the purpose, or one purpose of the Brahmaviharas, is to support us in cultivating these qualities, and we do it through our mindfulness meditation practice. And again, Ruth King, she says, the practice of kindness or metta is simple but not always easy. It's simple because they are humble phrases that we offer to ourselves and then extend to others. The practice is not easy because we don't always feel loving or kind. And when we are not feeling loving or kind, Ruth says, kindness practice is precisely what we need. Yeah, so I'm going to read that one again. It's not always easy. Okay, these are Ruth's words. The practice of kindness or metta is simple but not always easy. It is simple because they are humble phrases that we offer to ourselves and then extend to others. Yeah, we could say this in our mind, in our heart. We sat there, repeated it, listened. And then the practice is not easy because we don't always feel loving or kind. I'm like, tell the truth, Ruth. Tell the truth. When we are not feeling loving or kind, she says, kindness practice is precisely what we need. Because I know when I'm not feeling loving or kind, I don't want to do metta. But Ruth tells us, oh, that's exactly what we need to do. Yeah, so, you know, I can read that a different way too, or understand it and interpret it a different way too. It's like, if I'm feeling unkind, if I'm feeling resentment, aversion, disappointment, anger, frustration, whatever it is, I can still practice metta with those feelings in my heart. Because we're not making it up. Remember, it's genuine. We're not making it up. We're not going out to create it. We're not, you know, we have to be authentic and see the truth. And that's something that the Dhamma teaches us, is to see things the way they are. So even if we sit down or lay down or stand or whatever we do, whatever posture we're in, to cultivate loving kindness, and it doesn't arise, we can still incline the heart mind. As Ayananda Bodhi said, we can still cultivate a heart towards happiness. So in other words, if you're not feeling loving and kind, don't give up on your metta practice, even if you're doing it the however long you're doing it, because we have to see what's there and understand where that's coming from in order to get to the love and get to the compassion and to see what's causing this. And the Buddha said that we have to be careful, because sometimes when we practice this, anger will arise. It's known as the far enemy. Anger will arise. Imagine you sit down to practice loving kindness and anger comes up. What's behind that? What's under there? Or can you just offer yourself some metta anyway? And be like, yeah, anger, you're there. I see you. And I still want to cultivate kindness. Still want to incline my heart, mind to be open to love and well-being for myself and others. And the anchors there. And the other thing that can come up is attachment. That's a different kind of love. The Buddha says that the metta is an unconditional love. It is unconditional. It is meant for everyone without exception. So it's different than an attached romantic love or an attached love for, when you want something from your love or for being kind. That is different than metta. That's a different quality of love. So when things get difficult, when the anger arises, the frustration, whatever it is in your heart, tightness, you might not be able to articulate it. It might be a feeling, that primal feeling might be primal feeling of anger that Larry talked about. Whatever that feeling is, you want to be with it. And it can be difficult to practice the metta. And that's for me when I use the practices that I was sharing with you, when, it's too close for me to offer. I may not even be able to do, to name people, because it's like that naming the person makes more of the anger or frustration arise, or naming the situation makes more of the frustration arise. So that's when I go to all beings in this dwelling, all beings in this state, all being in the world, all beings in the universe, because it depersonalizes it for me and supports me. It's like my metta feels a little more, it could come out a little easier without the personalization. Or if I want to get a little closer, like we did, I can say, may my relatives, may all my friends, may indifferent beings, may difficult persons, may, whatever that is, it's like I don't have to get into the naming. And that way, that helps me to practice in difficult times with difficult situations of persons, because I can depersonalize it and still, try to cultivate a sense of well-being, or at least incline my heart mind towards that. Take a little sip of water. And I just noticed something's in the chat again. I'll try to peek at it. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Okay, I'll check those things. Remind me of those things in the chat when we get to the discussion part. So there are benefits of metta. The Buddha offered benefits of metta, which I think are also comforting to consider in difficult times, and just, you may have heard these before, but just let it land. I'll just read them out. It is said that people who practice metta sleep peacefully, wake peacefully, dream peaceful dreams. People love them. Angels love them. Angels will protect them. Poisons and weapons and fire don't harm them. Their faces are clear. Their minds are serene. They die unconfused. And when they die, their rebirth is in heavenly realms. Yeah. So, something to contemplate. Something to try for yourself. Something the Buddha also said, right? Ehipasako, I think that's the word. Those are the phrases in Pali. Go see for yourself, try it on. So, it's an invitation to practice some metta and explore and experiment and see if you sleep more peacefully, especially in difficult times. Because I know by the time I've gotten caught up in whatever's happening in the world or something, in my personal life, but right now it's like the world with all the wars and things going on. It's like, it's difficult to sleep. I want to know what's going on, and that stirs up my mind. So, maybe I should practice metta. Maybe I'll sleep peacefully. Maybe I'll wake peacefully, even if that's the only peace I get that day. Maybe I'll have peaceful dreams. You know? So something to consider. I think the Brahma Viharas are like a salve, you know? They're kind of a healing balm. I think all of the teachings of the Dhamma are that way. Even the ones that are hard to hear. It's like medicine that tastes bad. But it's truth. And it's going to do something to benefit me. So yeah, I just invite you to try it on. So, in closing, let me bring this up first before I go into closing. Let me make sure I can bring it up. One second, thank you for your patience. Oh, okay, there it is. All right, let me try again. All right, learning some new things on Zoom, so thank you for your patience again. In closing, I want to share the Buddha's words on loving kindness. So this is actually the Karaniya Metta Sutta, which the Buddha says are our instructions for loving kindness, how we should practice. And so I'll just read it. Karaniya Metta Sutta. It's a chant, and the first phrase does say, now let us chant the Buddha's words on loving kindness, but I'm going to read them. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life, her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. Whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. I'm going to share this PDF with you all. You may have already or seen it, but I definitely thought I would share it so that if I can get to it. Great. It's something that I reflected on and read over and over, over the years. And Oh, I can't share it. Okay. Sorry, I can't share it. I might find a link to it. I'll try that in a moment. But it's something that I reflected on because I thought it was a pretty tall order. And I had a lot of aversion and resistance to it, especially the part about the mother and the only child, because I have a child. I have an only child. And I'm like, oh, I'm supposed to love everybody like I love my daughter. Good luck. But as I reflect on it deeply, it really is just trying to say that we all deserve unconditional love. That's the bottom line. And so I hope that we can, offer it to ourselves. And from there, because I know offering it to myself, I begin to see all the things that I either don't like or don't love or I judge about myself. And so then it's hard to love myself unconditionally. So how can I love someone else unconditionally if I can't love Ramona? It's deep. And when I begin to realize that I have to forgive myself and love myself anyway, like my friend Fresh Lev White says, he has a beautiful writing around that, love myself anyway, or love yourself anyway. If I begin to see that and I can soften and forgive myself or accept myself the way I am, every now and then, when I see another being or situation or person, then the compassion comes and I can kind of understand how difficult it is for people that I want to be nice to, or that I want them to be nice in general because I have a view about them. I realize, oh, it's hard. It's hard to love ourselves. So it's really hard to love other beings that we have no control over. You know? It's really deep. And I will end there with that and just say thank you for listening. And and I'm excited to open for discussion. I'll try to find the link for the Buddha's words on loving kindness. Give me a second. I'm sure it's on the internet. Excuse me. Oh, okay. Here's a copy. I hope this works for those that are interested on access to insight. But you could always type in the internet too, the Buddha's words on loving kindness. Okay, I see a hand for, oh, Liz, yes, thank you. Oh, you're unmuted, I think. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi.
Hi.
Thanks. Nice to meet you. I don't think we've met before.
Nice to
Thanks
meet
for
you.
your very authentic talk.
Thank you.
And you exude that, which I really appreciate and enjoy. Don't give up that dancing. I'm serious. I don't know. I don't know if you know Thomas Davis the Fourth, who loves music. Well, I adore him. He's one of my favorite teachers, and he plays us Ella Fitzgerald. He plays us the most beautiful music. It's so enlivening and beautiful and full of love, full of love. The
Yes,
arts are
thank
full of
you.
love. Don't stop dancing. We need joy. But
Okay.
that's an order.
And I love Thomas. I used to work with Thomas, and I love Thomas. So he's really a
Yes,
dear
he's
Dharma sibling.
quite wonderful. But what I want to say is, and I never thought of this before. I woke up in a lousy mood. I've been going through a couple of disappointing days, and I'm very aggravated. And I'm glad that I tuned in because I nearly needed to think about what you've been saying tonight. But I never thought of Metta or the Brahma Viharas as a refuge. I thought of them as a resource, but I don't particularly care for that word. I love thinking of them as a refuge. And thank you for this talk because tonight you led me to that word, and that has changed a lot for me. I'm thinking of them as a refuge from here on in. So thank you so very much.
Thank you, Liz. Thanks for sharing. Thank you. Thank you. I'm
Many
glad that.
blessings and hope to see you again.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Wow. That's, if we can just touch one another, inspire one another. That brings me joy. That brings me mudita. Anyone else want to share something? Hi, John. Okay, I'll put the ask to unmute. So you have to, now I think you can unmute yourself. Okay. Hi.
Hi everyone. I really loved your talk.
Thank
And
you.
Metta, I've been really playing with it. And what I've been doing is it's very personal. So I will go through everybody that I know. And I might spend an entire 45 minutes just on everybody I can think of. And it's really helpful for particularly people that I like, but I also have difficulties with. It really helps my conversations in terms of just appreciating something about them that the difficulty otherwise get in my way. So it's really juicy. But what you're reminding me, and I was just thinking about it even in. And I walked around the neighborhood and I realized I wasn't sending out loving kindness to all the strangers I was passing. In the past I've done that and I was forgetting it. And it's like, oh, I have so much fun with everybody I know and giving them loving kindness that I've been forgetting about the neutral and the unpleasant. And that's what you reminded me of is like, oh, there's where the maybe I can find some juiciness that.
Well, I'm glad you're out there, sharing the sh sending metta, because another thing that you reminded me of is that I've heard, I can't remember if the Buddha said it or not, but someone said it. I've heard it somewhere in the Dhamma world about how the metta shines like the sun indiscriminately. So even though you're sending it to your individuals and loved ones, you're eluding all that love, so they're probably getting it anyway. And now you could direct it more for more juiciness and fun.
Yeah,
See
thank you.
how, and I just, you just illustrated how the metta leads to joy.
Oh, yeah.
How they work together. Thank you, John, for sharing that, pointing that out. Yeah. And I think there's something in the chat. Oh, thank you. You're welcome. Thank you. Thank you. Anyone else? Comment, reflection? Is it Steve? Yeah. Do I have to unmute you or can you unmute yourself? Let's see.
Yeah,
Okay.
I'm muted. So, thank you so much for your talk. I really enjoyed it as well. And early on, at the very near the very beginning, you spoke a phrase that really resonated with me, and I wanted to write it down, but then I kind of lost it. Part of it, what the second part of it was, I think, emboldens silence. Am I
Oh,
using
embodied silence.
embodied silence? Okay, and
Yeah,
what
that's what I like to, yeah, I like to,
embodied silence?
I'll put that in there.
Silence.
I like to say embodied silence.
Yes.
No, sorry. Embodied stillness
Okay.
and empowered
Empowered.
silence.
Okay, yes. Okay.
Just a different
In.
way of, I mean,
Yeah.
when the practice for me, I got to keep freshening it. Gets stale.
Right. So one more time, embodied
Embodied stillness
stillness, right?
and empowered silence. Because it's a choice to be silenced. It's like to recognize that silence for all people, especially people from marginalized community and oppressed communities and societies, we've been silenced. And I'm saying we, as a Black woman, as a Black Latina woman, I've been silenced or felt that I couldn't speak. And so to come into the practice of silence does not always feel good. It's like somebody telling me to be quiet and, you know, shut up. So, but knowing that the power of silence in meditation practice is liberating, actually. And so it's supportive to, it's supportive to use that language in certain communities that I share the Dhamma with who may have had my same experience. And it's not just for, you know, there's all kinds of oppressed and marginalized people for all different reasons, the way we discriminate against each other in communities and societies. So we've been silenced, not just by our voices, but sometimes even our expressions of ourselves, the way we dress, the way we move, the way we dance, what we, you know, so in being empowered again to choose to turn inward and listen to our intuitive wisdom, that's where my inspiration for using those words comes from.
Well, I appreciate what you just spoke about, you know, people that are oppressed in our society. You know, as a Caucasian male, I am gay, though, that there is oppression there. But it's just that phrase, it's a very powerful phrase, and I wanted to write it down, so I appreciate you repeating it for me. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You're
again,
welcome.
Thanks for being here.
May it benefit you. May it empower you.
Yes, they do.
We still have some time. And you know, I'm forgetting that there's a whole nother page. Okay, but a lot of those are on the phone. All right, if you're on the phone or something and you can't raise your hand, if you want to unmute and just let me know that you want to speak, you can do that. Yes, Nathan.
Hi.
Hi.
Good evening. Something you said just really reminded me of kind of the larger lesson of practice, one of the lessons of practice that I've remembered is what you were talking about, when we're not feeling kind or loving, that meta practice is actually what we need. It's so much of the practice is paradoxical from compared to like what I would, you know, my habits are is, you know, if I'm being self-critical or self-judging, those are like some of my little, you know, habits. And so the to be kind to myself, to like recognize my own strengths and my own innate abilities is kind of what I need in those moments. And it's so, it can be hard to like remember like, oh yeah, I gotta like pivot. I gotta like kind of shift a little bit and do the opposite of what I'm kind of inclined to do. So it's so funny how it's not necessarily natural, but through practice it becomes more easier to access. So yeah, thank you.
Absolutely. You're my pleasure. And I'm just going to say, though, that was Ruth King's quote that funny. I quoted to say, you know, those were her words. So, yeah. It's hard to pivot in my experience because I get so stuck. So when we remember, that's mindfulness. That's the insight. To me, that's the awakening and that's the liberation. I mean, okay. If I get to, you know, enlightenment or nirvana, whatever that is. But for me, it's the everyday application of the Dharma, you know, in those moments that you mentioned, Nathan, that is why I do this practice, so that I can remember to pivot every now and then, you know, and yeah. That is just like when we're doing our meditation and the mind wanders and we remember to come back to whatever that anchor is, the breath, the body, sound, whatever it is. It's like somehow in life we're marching along and we go, oh, I just need to pivot, you know? It's great. And I'm glad that we can remind each other that, you know, we can get caught But then we can get free. Even if it only lasts a moment, we can remember that later and later on, yes, on the path. So thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
Well, there's 5 minutes and I don't have to, we don't have to keep going. We can also do 5 minutes of meditation if there aren't any more questions. And if, or if you want to, you know, sign off early, you're free to do that as well. But I'd be happy to offer a few more moments of meditation and then dedicate the merit. How's that sound? Okay.
Yes, you're wonderful.
Thank you. All right, so yeah, let's just settle together. May all beings be safe, happy, and free. May all beings live with vitality, peace, and ease. May all beings live with kind, compassionate, joyous, equanimous, generous, and forgiving hearts. And may the merits of our practice together be of benefit to all beings everywhere, excluding none, including ourselves. Thank you for your practice. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for listening. Be well, be safe, be happy.